this life is o'er, I'll fly away to a home on God's celestial shore. I'll fly away. I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly.
Welcome to the radio program Genesis and the Gates of Hell. Everyone knows the book of Genesis, even if they haven't studied it, but the gates of hell is a less known phrase that is in the New Testament. It is the phrase used by Christ when he was with the disciples at Caesarea Philippi near the Sea of Galilee. Christ was telling his disciples that the church will go on the offensive against Satan, and Satan will not prevail, but the church will prevail. That is what this radio program is about. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Is that true? For a Christian, it is truth. In John chapter 1, it says, all things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. When your children come home from school or college with the notion that the stories in Genesis are untrue because science says it is not true, how do you respond? When you ask, what are you talking about? They will generally respond, science says so. Your response should be that science has changed, but the Bible has not. You can no longer reject the stories of Genesis because science disproves it, because recent scientific discoveries reaffirm the stories in Genesis. Well, welcome to the Genesis and Gates of Hell radio show, where we talk about Genesis. And you can't talk about Genesis without talking about the church. You can't talk about the church without talking about Jesus Christ. And all of that is in Genesis. So, Greg, we are on chapter 11 today. We're kind of jumping around a little bit, but we're still in the very beginnings of the book of Genesis. Certainly we began with chapter 1, and we have skipped around a little bit, talked about Abraham and Sarai and Isaac and Ishmael, which is a little bit ahead of chapter 11. But chapter 11 is about a particular story, and lots of people have heard about it. But why don't you tell them a little bit about what chapter 11 is overall?
You gotta
have his microphone potted up there.
Yes, you are
absolutely
right.
Okay. Nope, still don't hear him. Okay, you say he is.
All right, there you are.
There you are.
Mr. Producer.
Yeah, he's on top of it.
You know, You talk about the story about the Tower of Babel, and it typically you ask someone, well, what do you know about that story, and they say, oh well, you know, these people got together and they decided they was going to build a tower to heaven, and so God comes along and makes them start speaking different languages and thereby stops them from doing that, but it's a little bit more involved than that. It's not quite so cut and dry. And actually, we really go back to a fellow by the name of Nimrod. And Nimrod, the Bible says, was a powerful man. And let's take it back even a step further from Nimrod. Let's go all the way back to Ham. You know, if you're a...
Now, for those who were talking about Ham, we're talking about Noah.
That's right. That's right.
Noah's son. You know, you kind of have to start with Noah to get to Ham, to get to Nimrod.
Mm-hmm.
And the curse, now Ham was one of the Noah's children, right?
Yep. He was the son of Noah, and he's the one that we talked about, you know, dishonored his father.
Right.
And if you'll remember, it was sort of odd that Noah cursed Ham's son.
But he didn't curse
Ham. He cursed
You know, many people say, what about the curse of Ham? No, there is no curse of Ham.
You know,
indirectly, there may be.
Indirectly, I think so. But what I wanted to dwell on a bit is, if you're a father or a mother and you have several children and you watch them grow up and they go through their childhood and they grow up into young adults, you pretty much have a good idea of their character, don't you?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You might have one that's a little bit wild.
But
you're
always surprised.
But the point is that you might have one that's reserved. You might have one that could prone to tell a lie from time to time.
Yeah.
And then some of us, you know, we have those that are black sheep of the family, so to speak. And I think Ham had that kind of character. Unlike Japheth and Shem, who honored their father, Ham dishonored his father. And I believe that that probably ran down to Ham's son, Canaan. And I think, we don't know, but Canaan could have been cursed for a reason other than the fact that his father did what he did. But my point is that it kind of goes down the generational line there, because from Ham came Nimrod, and Nimrod was one that rebelled against God.
But he came from a group of builders. Mm-hmm. You know, I call them engineers, technocrats.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about the ancient world as being uncivilized and not knowing and unintelligent and all of that sort of
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
How in the world do you define building the pyramids?
Nimrod was probably the very first founder of an imperial kingdom, to be honest. He built, or I think he coordinated and connected several large cities in and around where the tower was built. And actually his
and something else, these people lived longer than we do.
Oh yeah.
Now.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
So once they learned their profession,
mm-hmm.
then they began to learn other things.
Mm-hmm.
They learned about economics,
mm-hmm.
how economics work. They learned about how political connections work, social interactions work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you live for 200, 300, 400 years, you have a wealth of knowledge that you just don't get now.
And with the tendency of man, you tend to perfect and hone your evil skills.
Oh yeah, and that's the other thing. Can man do anything good? If you listen to Calvin or Augustine,
mm-mm.
you'll say no.
There is no good in man.
And
no.
And Jeremiah says, or is it Isaiah? One of them says, "The heart of man is evil and corrupt. Who can know it?" So you've got 400 years of corruption going on.
Yep.
And now we're talking about Nimrod. I'm sorry, but I just had to throw that in because I think that adds, color to what you were saying.
Yep. And I think the same thing sort of applies for the flood, that man had sank to the utmost of depravity, and God said, who knows what his imagination may be able to dream up, what evil things, and so he eliminated all of that.
So God comes down to meet with the people that he had created after Noah.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps 20,000, perhaps 50,000. We don't know how many people there were.
Yeah.
We've got all kinds of weird estimates, but whatever there were in and around that area. And God said he came down to see what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Nimrod's name, actually, Merad, means to revolt, or we revolt. So I think Nimrod most likely was a leader and could garner support from people. And what he did was he brought these cities together, Rehoboth and Shiloh and Resen, and these formed this very large composite city that was called Nineveh, which you remember Nineveh. And
what was the prophet's name who didn't want to go to Nineveh?
Jonah?
Jonah.
Yeah, Jonah.
He had rather go into the belly of a whale than to go to Nineveh.
So Nineveh doesn't sound like it was a good place to go to.
Yeah.
So it was in this composite city that you get this people that a lot of them that Nimrod had brought together and decided to defy God and rebel against God. So it wasn't the fact that they were building a tower to reach to heaven as if God lived up in the clouds, right? They were building a temple with an idol atop it to worship.
And now, let's talk about that for just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Now, consistently throughout the Old Testament, it says to not worship idols.
Right.
And what does man, or what has man done? He has carved graven images that he would worship. This seems so foreign to us now. For some reason or other, we do not do that now. We do not take a chainsaw and create a wooden carved image and worship it here. Now, certainly the Inuits and the Indians did, but we're talking about Christians. Christians do not carve graven images and worship them. I've never seen a graven image in a Christian home that they go and worship and sacrifice to and all that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
So what's the purpose of that? That's bringing the God to man.
Mm-hmm.
So that man can create his own God to do, so that man can do his own things.
Right. As so, if he can contain God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so God, of course, our God, the only God, Jehovah, the triune God, you can't contain him. He's not somebody that you can put on the fireplace mantle.
No.
And sacrifice too.
And not only that, but if you worship an idol, what's worse than worship an idol is that you, by default, don't worship the one true God. You defy him, you rebel against him, you dismiss him.
And the other thing that you're doing when you build this this Tower of Babel or Ziggurat or whatever they call it now, is you are bringing God to you as opposed to you going to God, as if you could call God like you can a puppy.
Yep. You have him in a place.
You have him in a place that you can take, that you can handle him, that you can manipulate him.
Right, right. And you got to remember, you know, whether it was 10,000, I've read 30,000 where they've tried to, you know, come up with
a calculation
of the births. All of these people came from Ham, Japheth, and Seth. They were the progenitors of all of the human race after the flood. We don't see where Noah had any more children. So it wasn't as if the world was this huge place with a huge population.
Just because the Bible is silent about Noah having children,
it doesn't mean
he didn't have more children.
No, it doesn't.
Anyway, I just put that in as a theological addendum to the population.
But what we can say is it all came from Noah. Noah
That's
was
right.
the father of it all, and and God blessed Noah and his sons, you know, and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. That was God's commandment to them, to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. But what we see is that the people here in Genesis chapter 11, says, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens, so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the whole earth. Now, God told them, go, be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth. And they say, no, we're going to build a city and a tower. We're going to put a temple on top of it, and we're going to stay right here. We're not going to go forth and replenish the earth. We're going to congregate.
Sounds like man hadn't changed a lot after the flood.
Right. So we find in Genesis, it says, these are the families of the sons of Noah after their generations in their nations, and by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. So each one of these families went to certain regions in and around that area, and were to go forth and populate the earth. But they didn't do that. They said, we're going to make a name for ourselves. What do you think about a person that wants to make a name for themselves? Like, for instance, this would-be assassin of Trump, he said he wanted to be remembered, you know.
Well, it's about wanting to be their own God. That's what I come up with.
I think it's just the same sin that resulted in Lucifer's fall.
I can be as the Most High.
Pride. Me. Yeah.
Pride cometh before the fall.
Yep. So I want to make a name for myself. I want somebody to know who I am. And I think that is probably the chief sin of the people that were attempting to build this tower. They rebelled against God's command, but they also were prideful. They were doing it for themselves, and they were not honoring God by doing it.
The whole earth was of one language.
Yep.
When they started.
Yep.
And they obviously had some technical capabilities because they were making bricks.
Yep.
And they used some kind of they called it a slime.
Yes.
For mortar.
Yes.
And they decided to build. The Bible uses the term tower. Is that what it uses?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But then
yes.
The commentaries say, well, there was a ziggurat, which is a temple that was being built for other gods.
Mm-hmm.
And the men, women, whoever it is, they are writing these commentaries, seem to think that that's what God came down and saw. They were building these ziggurats, or this ziggurat, and call it a temple, call it a ziggurat, name it whatever you want to. It was a device mm-hmm. that allowed them to control their own God,
mm-hmm.
have their own civilization, and not look to God for their life.
Yeah, the ziggurat was a Mesopotamian structure that had sloped sides. And, you know, you may have seen these like in the Incas built. You had the steps going up, a sloped pyramid kind of structure.
Right.
And at the top, they put a temple.
Yep.
So it was built to be a shrine at the top. And so they had steps going up to it, and it would be considered stairs to heaven.
And they had their own priest.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah. And so I think we see this was flagrant rebellion and an example of the willfulness of man. Man decided that through Nimrod's leadership that they were going to have their own
temple. And what was it that they want to be able to reach?
I don't know that they were really trying to build something to a place called heaven. I think they were building it such that at the top would be a temple or a shrine that represented their idea of heaven, perhaps.
Does the text give us a particular thing that they were trying to do that you remember?
No. Okay. I mean, they would certainly be limited to how high they could go. Now, what they were using were bricks that were fired. So in that area, they didn't have a lot of stone, but they did have material that they could form, clay-type material they could form into a brick, and then they fired it at real high temperatures like we do today. And that causes the brick to become very durable and very strong.
Like a rock.
Exactly. And also in that area, near the Valley of the Nile, they had an abundant supply of what the Bible calls slime, but it was actually bitumen or tar, which, you know, tar can get pretty hard when it dries out.
Right.
And so that's what they used for the mortar. And they've found archaeological, is that the way you say that?
That's close enough.
Close enough. They found structures that were made of brick and tar in that area. And so that's what they were using. And so the Lord came down, and he decided that he was going to stop it. He was going to restrain man. And so he confounded their speech such that they did not understand each other. And I would imagine not only was that a scary thing that, you know, the person you wake up to the next morning, possibly your wife, you can't understand what she's saying. I would initially think something was wrong with me if I couldn't understand what people were saying to me. It would scare me. It would frighten me. I wouldn't understand not only the words they were using, but might not even understand the guttural sounds they were making. It could have been, who knows, what kind of confusion he sowed within them. And so they dispersed in disunity because they could no longer function. They couldn't build, they couldn't communicate, and they couldn't coordinate any efforts.
So I'm looking at my questions. What did the people quit doing? Well, what they quit doing was they quit building the temple.
Mm-hmm.
There's no indication as to what happened to the temple, whether it collapsed of its own weight or just went away over time. We don't know.
No. Some people claim that there's a remnant of a tower in that area that could have been it. And the Israelites contend that that was the temple of Babel, but most likely not.
And the name of the place is what?
Oh, I can't recall the name of it.
How about Babylon?
That's right. You're right. There. Yeah, that's right.
It's Babylon. Came from Babel.
Right. Yes, that is Babylon. Mm-hmm.
And in what country is Babylon now? Do we know? Is it Iran?
I think it's Iraq.
Iraq.
I think
yeah,
it's Iraq.
That's right.
And Babel and Babylon, of course, Babylon and Babel sound a lot alike. The word in Hebrew actually means confused.
Yeah.
You know, you hear people say, well, he's babbling like a drunk or an idiot. Yeah. It means you're confused. Not that you don't know what you're talking about, but you're just confused. Which I guess confounded them.
So I guess there's nothing in the Bible true because there isn't a place called Babylon anywhere in the world. Oh, excuse me. Yes, there is a place called Babylon. Still here.
So, you know what struck me odd is that 50,000 people or 30,000 people, that's really not a lot of people.
No.
You know, this was only like, what, maybe 100 years after the flood? 100 to 200 years after the flood?
I'm not sure, but It's long enough so that people sort of forget what happened.
Mm-hmm.
People have short memories of, what is it they say, the news cycle is now 2 weeks from the time people remember what's going on to, and they, you know, an election, when are supposed to, people supposed to begin campaigning and all that. People have such short memories.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But we know this. People have short memories now. I'm sure they had short memories then.
Now I'm sure it's...
And they invent their own gods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we find now that pride seems to be this common theme that runs through from the fall of Lucifer, actually through the fall of Adam and Eve. It was by their pride that they wanted to be like God. And we see now that the Tower of Babel is another prime example of pride. And I wonder if we can find pride in our own lives. Do you think you can look inside yourself and see where you're proud about something that perhaps you shouldn't be?
Well, there's different kinds of pride.
You can be proud of your grandchildren.
Yeah, it's a... there are different... There are prides that are acceptable to God. You can certainly be proud of God. But pride is not a good thing. That is the origin of most sin, is pride.
Isn't it, though? Because you're focusing not on God, but you're focusing on yourself, or something you made with your own hands, or something you wrote or did.
It's all about you. The pride, it comes from you.
Yeah, yes. Even when we get proud of even our grandchildren, we're sort of taking credit, aren't we?
Yep.
You know, or if we're proud that we have this new job. And honestly, what do you have that did not come from God?
Something that you think you created by creating your own God.
So here they're...
Your graven image.
Yep. Here they're creating. So pride can certainly be a form of an idol for us. Something that we have pride in can serve as an idol and can be, can take our focus off of God. So again, if we point our love to the highest good, which is God, then we know that we are right. If we take anything less than the highest good and takes our attention away from God, then that, I think, is sin, and pride is one of those things that does that. So.
What do we got? 1 minute?
1 minute.
What is the pride of life in the Bible? 1 John 2:16 refers to arrogant, selfish, boasting, and a pretentious lifestyle that relies on personal status, wealth, or accomplishments rather than on God.
That's right. It causes you to be haughty, and the Bible says that God despises a haughty spirit.
It is a self-centered obsession with appearances of independence. Appearances of independence. I think that's an interesting way to put it. We think we're independent of God. We think we do all these things on our own. Mm-hmm. We think we can do this. We think it's our action, when in fact it's either the action with the help of and grace of God, or perhaps it is originates from the evil one.
I would say pride has a lot to do with our confusion. Yeah, we get confused about things. We don't see them clearly.
materialistic security, pretentious living. Have you ever heard it said they're living beyond their means? Pretentious living. Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that going on in these subdivisions around here. So anyway, there's so much about this. Yeah. It all has to do with sin.
Fashion. Fashion is the epitome of pride.
Yeah.
And look at me. I look good today.
Yeah. Lots of jewelry. A beautiful suit, pair of shoes, tuxedo, white tie and tails. You name it.
Yep. So the tower.
Or the car.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're talking
or
about
the house. Or the house, yeah. The lawn.
Why do you want a new car?
Yeah, so everybody will watch you when you drive by. So the story of the Tower of Babel is not about confusion so much as it is about pride, rebellion and pride, focusing on something other than God.
All right, I think that's zero time and time to get out of here. See you next week, folks.
Y'all have a good week.
We are not mighty by the world's measure, nor wise, nor of noble standing. And yet God has called us out as a royal priesthood, that we should show forth his truth and declare his glory. Though our program rejoices in seeing the handiwork of God's creation, and we stand amazed at his order and intelligent design, we do not rest our message there, nor do we seek to persuade or convince you by the wisdom and science of this age. For we are not here to prove God by secular means, nor add to the sufficiency of Christ crucified, which is the power of God unto salvation to all who believe. Until our next broadcast, may the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace.
Some glad morning when this life is o'er.